One, two, three, Natalie!
Hi, welcome to the Person Natalie podcast. I'm your host, Natalie. Today's special guest is Jenny Sheed Timmer. Jenny and I went to college together, and we have the good fortune of living in DC together. I invited Jenny on the show because I think she really embodies confidence in a great way. She is the right balance of being confident, but also humble. And so I'm hoping that we get to hear a little bit of her insights today, and hopefully you learn something too. So Jenny, welcome to the show.
Hi, Natalie. Very excited.
Yeah, Jenny's been a very faithful listener, so I really appreciate it.
It's like I'm being a celebrity right now on the Person Natalie podcast.
You are a celebrity in my eyes because you're going to be something big one day, Jenny. Yeah, especially because of this confidence topic. I like really believe that. So people are going to be listening to this episode. I need to sound good now. I know there are going to be a lot of future viewers out there. All right. So speaking of confidence, I guess the first thing we should talk about is what is confidence? What does it mean to you? What does it mean to me? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. So I think that's a really hard question because I think it does mean different things to different people. I think for me, confidence means that you're self-aware, you know what you're good at, you know what you're not good at, and you just do you. And I do me, and we're ourselves, and we're honest about that.
Yeah, I think that's really true. I think it's really knowing who you are and being true to that. But I think a lot of people have a hard time with that.
Yeah. I think, you know, it's easy to say, well, you do you and I do me, but what is me and what is you? And I think that's really hard because especially when you're young, I mean, you know, we were both teenage girls at one point in middle school, and it's really tough because you don't know. And so much of what you think you are is, I think, actually what you think you should be as opposed to who you are. And I mean, when you're that young, I don't think you really know who you are anyways. That's a long process. And, you know, I don't think I've really found me necessarily. Like, I'm 30 now. I'm sure who I was at 18 is different from who I am at 30. And it's going to be different when I'm 60, you know. But I think as long as you recognize what you are at this time and, you know, what you're good at, what you're not good at, what you need to work on, I think that gets you a long way there.
Mm-hmm. When you see people who are confident, what do you think are some of the common attributes that you see in them?
I think what you're seeing is what you're getting. And, you know, they can be honest. I think whether they're saying something that's good or bad or whatever, but that's just what they believe. And I really respect that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a really great point. I think for you too, one of the reasons why I think you're confident is that you very much welcome criticism.
I love criticism.
Yeah, tell me a little bit more about that. Like, why do you love it? Have you always loved it? What do you love about it?
Yeah, I did not always love it. So I think, you know, I think when I was much younger, and I mean, not even that much younger, like even probably, like, I mean, criticism is hard. I think even now, like, I love it, but it's hard to take, right? You know, I think it stems from, I was raised knowing with the strong belief that nobody is perfect. Everyone has good qualities and everyone has bad qualities. And you have to face your bad qualities and own up to them and try to deal with them. Because otherwise, you know, you end up suppressing them and they always end up coming out. Or you end up being someone else and trying to fake something. But it's better to, it's like confronting your fears almost, kind of. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really important to recognize what you're not good at because, one, you can make it better, but two, it does negatively affect people around you. And I think some of the best criticism that I've taken most to heart is when someone tells me, look, that really, someone that I really care about saying something like, look, the way that you acted there, you know, actually does really hurt me. And that's the kind of stuff that I really do want to work on because people around me are important to me and I really want to change those things so that people can't change to a certain, like, I work on being more patient. I work on being more sensitive, more sympathetic, being more people-oriented than results-oriented, you know? I mean, I think this applies in the work world, too, because nobody is perfect. Like, we're all really young. We're starting work. And the only way that you can get better is to know what you're not good at. Mm-hmm. Like, it's, my parents always told me this, it's great sitting on your laurels and knowing what you're good at, but that doesn't make you any better. Obama had this in his first memoir where his dad, you know, he had a 98 in his class. And it's like, okay, well, what about the other 2%? Like, why did you get those two wrong? And I mean, I think that's kind of an extreme example, but that's, it all is part of a piece, you know, like, it's great that you got those 98 right, but you already know that stuff. So what about those two that you didn't know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I thought it was interesting, the love of criticism example that you gave was a personal situation. I just assumed that it was going to be work-related, that, you know, yeah. or like school-related. But I think it's great that you're open to like personal criticism too.
Yeah, I think the personal criticism thing is definitely more recent. Mm-hmm. I always loved criticism growing up in terms of school and work. Like, I want to know how to get that A. I want to know how to get that A+. And because I'm always trying to do something better. But I think the personal thing, that's really hard growing up, because when you're growing up, you want people to like you.
Yeah.
You know, you just want as many people to like you as possible. And I think as I've gotten older, I've realized, one, it's okay if people don't like you. And two, it just sometimes, you know, they're right. You know, there are people who are close to me that I really care about, and things that I do can hurt them. And that I do really care about. And so I want to know that so that I don't continue to do things that could be hurtful to people, or, you know, who that can rub people the wrong way, because I really do care about these people and I do want to make sure that I don't treat them a certain way. You know?
Yeah. So you're pretty good at when someone says, hey, this hurt my feelings, you're able to take that and kind of try to change
it. In time,
it?
I will not say like at the, in the moment, mm-hmm. I'm sure if you talk to my husband, he'd be like, oh no, she's terrible. Because I think in the moment, it's not. Because in the moment, you're defensive. You know, in the moment, I think if you're fighting about something, I think it's really hard to in the moment be like, okay, no, you're right. But I think with the passage of like 5 minutes, 10 minutes, maybe the next day, and then you think and you reflect and you're like, no, this person has a point. I need to work on this. And then it's a slow process. It's not an overnight process. You know, it takes years and years. And, you know, there's things that I constantly work on. But, and like I said, I mean, it's not like something you hear the criticism right away and you're like, oh, that's a really good point. Yeah, let me go and change that. At first, it's like, no, it's not. I'm not like that. Like, da-da-da, you know. But then you really, I feel like, do have to think and reflect, because I feel like every fight, every argument, every interaction, people getting, it's always a two-way street. And it's, even in the worst scenarios, I feel like it's not a someone is at fault thing. But I don't really see things in terms of black and white. I see a lot more things in shades of gray. And so at that point, you just have to realize that, you know, you're probably contributing somehow on your own. Mm-hmm. And it might take you some time to realize that, but, you know, you gotta work on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting. Another theme that I noticed when we're talking about confidence is that you reference your family a lot and kind of your childhood. So how have your parents kind of affected your confidence and how you view yourself?
My parents are just the most amazing people. You know, I think I'm very close to my parents. I think a few things. I think in the workspace, what's given me confidence is my mom was always a working mom. She was always very strong and did her job and did a good job. And it's okay if you're good. The motto was always, if you're going to do something, you're going to do it right. Like, either don't do it or do it right. And she was always a working mom and balanced. And every day we had dinner, she made dinner every day together. I can't remember a single instance when we got takeout. There were times where because my dad loves pizza. So my dad would like bag and bag and then like, fine, okay, we'll order pizza, you know. But other than that, it was never like, oh, we're too busy, we're not going to eat dinner as a family or something. Like, she was always able to do that and do well and like crush it at her job. And I think having that and just seeing that as almost the norm. And then it was always like they were driving me to swim practice and mock trial and like hanging out with my friends. And the house was always super clean. And now in hindsight, I'm like, oh my God, like, how on earth did you guys do this? And then they would always have like projects, like they'd always be remodeling this and like gardening that. And so that was pretty incredible. But I think the other big thing is they're very accepting and very forgiving people. So I think every family has their drama, and our extended family and our family is no exception. And so you see people who you really love have a good side and a bad side. And my parents are always very accepting of everybody. You know, it's recognizing, okay, this is not good. This is not something we want to strive for. Okay, this is bad, but how do we fix it? And how do we still love this person and accept this person and include them in our family, as opposed to, oh, we're cutting this person out, you know, like, oh, we don't go to this family gathering because of X, Y, Z, or friend gathering. And So I think they kind of taught me the very important lesson of just, it's totally okay to not be perfect. It's totally okay to have your flaws, but you got to be honest and address them. And, you know, and I think one thing they were really good with me about is, like, I did tons of bad stuff as a kid, but they always treated me like an adult. And when there were things that I would not, thinking now with my kids, I'm like, oh my God, I would not let my kids get away with this. But they would sit me down and say, okay, this is not good, but let's explain why this is not good. And then let's explain, how do we prevent this from happening in the future? Or how do we address this? And if it happens again, like, talk to us about it, you know? And so the very acceptingness of it all would made it very easy for me to realize, okay, if you have a flaw, if you do something bad, the world's not going to end. People are not going to hate you. People will still love you and support you. So it's okay. Like, it's okay to have flaws. I mean, obviously, you don't want to keep on doing bad things over and over again. But, you know, you don't need to be this, like, perfect, wonderful person. And I feel like sometimes when I was younger, a lot of, like, I would lie about stuff. Mm-hmm. But sometimes it would be because I wanted people to have this image of me, or I would say that I would do a certain thing because I wanted to fit in with a certain group of people, mm-hmm. you know, at school or something. And so I was doing stuff that lying or like presenting myself in a certain way because I wanted to fit some kind of image and not of who I was. Mm-hmm. But then once you have parents who like accept you and forgive you for all that stuff, you just realize, oh, it's totally okay to like be me. And I think having that core of people who kind of love you unconditionally, flaws and all, that makes it so much easier to accept yourself, flaws and all. And then from there, I think you can start going into the, okay, what am I good at? What am I not good at? Because it's really hard to recognize what you're not good at if you feel like no one around you actually likes you.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. So do you have any stories about all this stuff that you want to share, Jenny?
So when I was growing up, I was supposed to go to Chinese school every weekend and I hated it. I hated going. And my senior year, when I was like driving myself around, and I mean, I was really driven in high school. And I mean, I'm still a very driven person, but I felt like I missed out on a lot, like partying with my friends and stuff. And my senior year, I had like gotten into college already. And I just like really wanted to spend more time hanging out with my friends because I felt like all this stuff was like going away from me and I want to take advantage of this time. So since I was driving myself, I totally ditched Chinese school every week and I did not go to a single Chinese school class. Finally, we get to the end of the year and my parents go to the Chinese school party or whatever and came home. And my mom never loses her temper. She's very even keel. Like she gets mad, but it's that scary silent kind of mad.
Yeah.
She was so angry with me and just said, you know, your teacher told me that you never showed up for a single class and she couldn't give you any kind of report card because everything's just blank because you didn't show up for anything. And like, how could you ditch every single class? And my mom came in and she was just like yelling. And I was like, you know, if that was my kid, I would probably be like, oh my God, you can't cut like every single class, like talk to me or something about it. Like say you don't want to go, but I just didn't want the confrontation. So I just stopped going. But it was like, okay, like, let's talk about this. Do you know why this is wrong? Like, do you? And I was like, yeah, I know why this is wrong. Okay. So why did you lie about it? I was like, well, I didn't want you guys to think that I was like cutting class. But I mean, just stuff like that where you kind of just work through it as adults and then you learn, okay, so in the future, when I have a problem like that, like, let's actually talk about it instead of just avoiding the confrontation and skipping class every weekend. Super, super understanding and supportive. And then I knew like, okay, you don't hide things, like bring it out in the open.
Yeah.
You address things and okay, you do stuff that's bad, like lie about things. Like there's obviously someone there and you totally lied about not having anyone there, but it's not going to be the end of the world. And then you learn that it's okay not to be perfect. So you don't need to lie about things. You know, you don't need to like cover things up and you can just be honest about it and then work through it.
Yeah. Do you have any other stories that you think have kind of help shape who you are today, either, you know, in terms of being a confident person or who you are generally?
I mean, I think one thing, actually, you probably don't know this, but I think the least confident part of my life, I would say, were my 4 years at Dartmouth.
Really? Honestly,
yeah, I think that's where I was. Well, I think that's where I gained my confidence a lot. And I think that was because growing up, I had moved a lot growing up. So I was born in Beijing, moved to Chicago when I was 5, and I moved twice in Chicago, and then we moved to Philadelphia, the suburbs, and we moved twice in that area. And then we finally ended up in Colorado. And so I had moved a lot as a kid, and I learned how to make friends. I mean, it wasn't easy, because please believe, when you're like the new Chinese girl and you don't speak a word of English and you're going to school, like, you're going to get made fun of a lot. And you don't even know that you're getting made fun of. And then you like go home and tell your parents stuff, and they're like, oh, that's kind of making fun of you, you know? Yeah. But so like through that process, I kind of learned how to make friends. I learned how to fit in, and all of that stuff. But then I got to Dartmouth, and all of a sudden it's this whole new, I don't know if you got this, but it's this whole new Northeast culture.
Yeah.
And there were a ton of people from Boston and New York. And it was this whole world that I had never seen a pop collar before coming to Dartmouth. And I was like, why do all these people have their collars up? Like, do they not know that their collars are up? Did something happen? And then I realized it was like a thing. But I mean, that just shows you how foreign it was to
me.
And I mean, and I think that says a lot considering I moved from Beijing to the United States. Like the fact that I felt most out of place when I went to Dartmouth, I think is kind of telling. And so I went to this totally foreign place, and all of a sudden I didn't really know how to fit in because I didn't know how to connect with people because I didn't know what they were like.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you don't know what someone else is like, you have a hard time connecting with them, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And so I felt like I had that in a lot of ways at Dartmouth. And the first few years, the first couple of years, I think, were really hard because I didn't feel like I really connected with anybody. I mean, I had friends, like we went out, we partied, like, you know, you go to the frat, you play some pong, like, you know, you have a lot of fun, but you don't necessarily, I didn't feel like I necessarily connected with anybody.
Mm.
And then, but it was also the period of time where I feel like because I had so much alone time, where I was like, you know what, it's cool. Like, not connecting with people just means we're different. Like, I'll just spend some more time by myself. Mm. I mean, not to say that it was easy. Like, there were definitely times where it was very, like, woe is me. Did I make the right choice coming out here for college? Like, why am I not connecting with people? Is it something that's wrong with me? Because I had all these great friends growing up in Colorado, and I maintained such a close connection with them. And then all of a sudden, I moved to this place, and I feel like I couldn't make a connection with anybody.
Yeah.
And, like, I would call my parents crying, and I would be like, and like my first year, I spent hours and hours on the phone with my friends from Colorado, like thinking like, oh, what if I just like transferred back to CU or something?
Yeah.
But I think because of that also, I realized that also I was still okay. You know, I didn't necessarily need all those people. And so I was okay just having my close group, and I might be different from these people and not really fit in, but that's okay. And, you know, and I have some really close friends from Dartmouth. And I think some of that takes time in some of those relationships. Like, I feel like we're much closer friends now than we ever were at Dartmouth.
Totally.
Like, we didn't know each other that well.
Yeah.
So it was one of those times where I felt the most isolated, but I think I also found myself the most.
Really?
I think that's all in hindsight. I think at the time I was feeling very alone.
Yeah.
But now in hindsight, it was like, you know, it's good for me. It's good for me to get out of my comfort zone and not be surrounded by my close network, even though I think the close network is what gives you your confidence. It's good to go through hardship, and if by hardship I mean I had 4 like slightly lonely years at Dartmouth, and that's the hardest thing I ever do, like, you know, that's great life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not a real hardship, but it definitely was the time I think I felt the most alone.
Yeah. Well, I think there's so many things to be said from that. I think loneliness is a really big thing that our generation, I think, faces more than other generations in the past, especially in America, where it's a very like individualist culture. And I think it's ironic because I've said this on the podcast before, you know, we have technology that is supposed to help us connect and with anyone, but I think in many ways we're kind of not connected at all. And I think the thing that you're talking about, like hardship really helping you grow, is so true. And I think that's what actually can make like true confidence real and not go into the arrogant side, which you and I have talked about before. There's a fine line between confidence and arrogance. And I think you having experienced like a period of like loneliness, it kind of grounds you and brings you back to life, and your head doesn't get so big. I think that,
and then also, I mean, I didn't even think about it before, but what I was saying about moving a ton and then moving to the United States, I think having a lot of people make fun of you and not like you. I mean, like, I get that. I know that bullying is a real problem. For me, I think bullying actually, I don't know if you can qualify it as bullying, because I think there's definitely a difference between bullying and making fun of kids and just putting kids through their paces, like as all kids go through. So I don't know if I can say what I went through qualifies as bullying, but I did switch schools 8 times in the 9 years or whatever. And it's always really hard. Like when I was in 7th grade, when we first moved to a new school, like I ate lunch by myself in the bathroom, you know, I mean, for a while until, because I, you know, when you're in 7th grade, you cannot go into a bathroom. I mean, you can't go into the cafeteria and eat lunch by yourself. That's just like, you just can't do
that. Yeah, it's like social suicide. Yeah,
no, totally. So like I would just like, oh, I'm gonna go to the bathroom. And then, so things like that, I think, made me a lot stronger. And then because I overcame that, you know, eventually like made a great group of friends. I have a really good group of girlfriends from growing up in Colorado. And I have a really great group of guy friends from growing up in Colorado. And I mean, like I met all of them and some of them was in high school, some of it was in middle school, but I just mean, I think going through those tough experiences, but then overcoming it, I feel like makes you feel like you have value. But I realize that's really hard because some people never get out of that.
Yeah.
Some people never get out of that eating alone in the bathroom thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, in terms of how do you get out there, yeah. I think one of it is just like facing your fears and just realizing that, okay, so if I stay in the bathroom, I'll always stay in the bathroom. I used to go with my dad to his office a lot and he has this, I think it's like a fortune cookie thing or something like that, but it's taped to his phone and it says, always hope for the best and prepare for the worst. And that's like been my motto my whole life. And then just recently he told me that that was a total joke. But
what do you mean a total joke?
I don't know. He was like, oh, that was like meant as a joke. And I was like, well, it's been my motto my whole life. kind of still that work. So it's, you know, what's the worst that can happen, right? So
right.
If people don't like you or you're alone, the worst that can happen is that people continue to not like you and you continue to be alone. It's the status quo, right?
Yeah.
But if you put yourself out there, then you can potentially make things better. Mm-hmm. And so the worst is no worse than the status quo. And then the best is potentially better. And then, you know, you learn to connect with people. And you won't connect with people if you don't actually interact with people.
Yeah.
You know, you won't actually make yourself better if you don't know what you're not good at. And so I think that's the worst. It's the worst case that can happen. And I think it's learning that the worst case is really not that bad.
Yeah.
Like the world is not going to end if people don't like you. The world is not going to end if you're not good at certain things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's talk about your grandpa, Jenny. I want to hear more about your grandpa. I know that he holds a very special place in your heart. And whenever you talk about him, I see a side of you that I love. You can like really feel how much you care about him. And yeah, I think it's like very special.
I love my grandpa. Yeah. So part of the reason we're so close is because he helped raise me. So we were in Beijing. I was 2 when my dad came to the U.S. to do his graduate degree. And then my mom came here when I was 3 or 4. So I spent the next couple of years with my grandparents in Beijing, my grandma, my grandpa. And when we finally came to the U.S., my grandfather was the one who came over here with me. He was the one who walked me to the bus the first day of school. And he would do these things that, like, he totally always, like, he put himself out there. So I remember neither of us spoke a word of English when he dropped me off for the first day of school. Because I learned English through the English as a Second Language program in public schools. So first day of kindergarten, I didn't know a word of English. All he knew was from, like, Bible study groups. So he knew hallelujah. But he had no idea what hallelujah meant. He just knew, like, hallelujah was an English word. So we, I can't remember if this was like the first day of school or like later on, but we'd be at the bus stop and Lao Ye is the Chinese word for my grandfather and my mom's side. So he would just go to people and say, hallelujah, hallelujah.
Oh.
And in hindsight, I'm like, oh my God, who is this like crazy old Chinese man like, saying hallelujah to people? But like, you know, he was just, that was the English that he knew. And he always wants, you know, it's like, you connect with people and you make do with what you have. I remember very distinctly on the flight over from from Beijing to Chicago. So it was my first flight ever. You know, we're coming to a new country. And in China, when you, all the milk is warm, like you have warm milk, you don't have cold milk. So it was like 5 at the time. I asked for milk on the plane and they hand us this cup with like this cold milk. And I was like, oh my God, like, what do I do with this? Like, I can't drink this. This is like raw. And, but Laya was like, yeah, okay, like, I'll take it. I'll drink it. And that kind of continued all, you know, I think there's a lot of old people who won't change, but my grandfather totally embraced it. Like, he loves stinky cheeses. He loves, like, every, you know, this is totally illegal probably, but like back in the day when we used to go back to China, we would totally smuggle in cheeses. We would totally smuggle in cheeses. Like, now it's okay because now you can, like, import stuff. And, but back in the 90s when it was a lot more difficult to get cheese in China.
Yeah.
We would totally smuggle in like mozzarella and like Parmesan so he can make his own pizza at home and stuff like that. So I think I got a lot of that from him. And then also the value for just education and taking advantage of what you have, because I think he only had a formal education up to the 4th grade.
Oh, okay.
His like village was taken over. But anyway, so he didn't really have much formal schooling. But ever since then, he's just tried to take advantage of as much as he can. So he like read widely. And even now as a 90-year-old man, he just like quotes Tang Dynasty poetry. And he was big culture. He was the first director of the Beijing Zoo. He was the one who formed the Beijing Zoo. He was the one who got the first panda. Oh my God, Pooja would love this. Pooja needs to listen to this. My grandfather was the first person to bring a panda into a zoo when he was director of the Beijing Zoo. There's a whole documentary about him in China and like how he got the zoo started. And it's fascinating because back in those days, people were starving and they had no food and they had no meat. And meanwhile, like, he got the directive from above, you know, yo, get us some lions. And so he gets lions and it's like, but you got to give me meat to feed those lions. They didn't even have like meat to feed the people. Yeah. So it's like balancing all of that. It's really fascinating. You know, he had a lot of cultural exchanges with people and he always took that opportunity to learn. Like when he went, got taken out to nice restaurants, he would go back, meet the chefs, learn how to cook their food. So he's a fantastic chef because he like learned how to make all those specialty dishes. When, you know, people would give them artwork to like hang and display, he took lessons and he was very serious about his Chinese watercolor painting, like the traditional Chinese watercolor painting. He's really, really good at it. And he passed that on to me. Like that's one of the things that we did together. We did Chinese watercolor painting and calligraphy and I still like love it. And I have all the brushes. I haven't done it in a long time, but I mean, it's just stuff like that where he's like this Renaissance man and, you know, just great at poetry, cooking, like painting and, but at the same time, he only had like an education up to elementary school. And it's always been like, okay, well, you have make the most of your opportunities because, you know, you gotta earn it and you gotta give it your 110% and just, you know, don't let things go to waste and pass.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of my neuroses that I have and my type A personality and my drive actually comes from my grandfather and
Oh, really?
I used to think it was for my parents.
Yeah.
And then I see how laid back my parents are sometimes and they keep on telling me to relax.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, actually, I probably got it from my grandpa.
How often do your parents tell you to relax?
A lot.
Really?
Yeah. I think they think I'm more stressed out than I am. Because I do worry ahead. I'm a planner.
Yeah.
And so when like I always plan for like 10, 20, 30 years ahead, they're like, Jenny, like, stop worrying about this. Like, it'll be fine. Yeah, so I think I get a lot of stuff in hindsight from my grandfather because, you know, he really did raise me through the formative years.
So Jenny is pregnant. She and Timur are expecting a baby girl in February. I was wondering, what kind of message do you want to send to your daughter? How have you thought about, you know, how you want to raise her? What do you want her, what do you want to teach her? About, you know, being a girl, being confident, about being a person in this world.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, having been a girl and still being a girl. I don't know why I said it that way. But, you know, you kind of go through and you see all of what society expects of you, kind of sometimes what family expects of you, what you expect of yourself. And I think there is a lot, especially today in today's world with, like, all this, like, lean in and glassy. There's a lot of expectation. I think it's harder, almost harder than before because there's a lot of expectation for perfection in everything.
Mm.
Like you need to be successful at work, but you can't neglect your home duties because you have to, like, there's that family work-life balance thing. And then strong is the new skinny. So you have to be like skinny and strong and like look good. And like, there's just so many different pressures and there's so many perceptions of what like a woman should be. I don't know exactly what I would, how I would raise her, except to acknowledge that it's really hard. Mm-hmm. And that there's so, and to let her know that you don't need to be all those things. So what I would tell her is it's okay to, you don't need to be all those things. My parents used to say something similar to me. And I think the most recently, the person who said this, Joe Biden, said his grandmother used to always tell him this, is nobody's better than you and you're no better than anybody else. And I think you just kind of keep that in mind and just, you're a good version of yourself. But at the same time, you're not perfect. I'm not perfect. Like, your father's not perfect. And to the extent that you have flaws, like, that's okay. And we'll, you know, recognize them. So love you for it. And, you know, we'll work on them. Mm-hmm. Because that's part of being, I feel like so much of growing up and being an adult is recognizing your flaws and working on them and making it, you know, being a better version of yourself.
Yeah. It's funny. When I asked you this question, you said, I don't know. And I said, I appreciate your honesty. And I believe that there's a part of you that doesn't really know, but I think subconsciously, you know, because, I mean, you have your shit together, Jenny. Yeah. And I think, first of all, you and Timur are great. You guys are great partners. So, like, that's already, you guys have a leg up. But a lot of the stuff that we, like, talked about on this episode, I think the fact that you have such a strong bond with your family, that, you know, already gives you such a leg up. And you know the importance of family. And then kind of some of the struggles that you've gone through. And I love the, like, just get out of the bathroom analogy. You know, yeah. You just have to, like, with kids, they're going to go through hardships and they're going to go through tough times. Yeah. And just telling them that, you know, they can get out of the bathroom. And like you said, the worst thing that's going to happen is kind of like the status quo. And so just kind of be confident in who you are and trying to get to know who you are. And I think having the core, I'm borrowing the language that you used, but having that core group of unconditional love, I mean, that's the best way to kind of.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I'm hoping. I mean, I think the details are going to change for every kid. I mean,
right.
You're one of two. I'm one of two. My parents definitely parented me different from how they parent my little sister. Oh, one thing my mom said the other day, actually, when I was home telling her my fears about, like, oh, gosh, I am no way qualified to raise a child. Like, there's no training for this. And, you know, I kind of asked her, you know, what she did with me and my sister, and she just said, common sense. Honestly, at the end of the day, it's even if you don't admit it to your parents, you know what's right and what's wrong. Like, it was like the lying example. Like, I would totally cover it up for my parents. But inside, I knew that that was wrong. I was a really, really stubborn kid. I'm still very stubborn. I'm still very stubborn.
Me too.
And my parents, oh my gosh, my parents would always say, you will go through hell and back to say that you're right about something. And that I'm working on that. That's one of the things I'm not good at, but I'm working on it. But deep inside, and not even that deep, like, I know that they're right and I know that I'm wrong. Mm. And so I think my mom's big point was, for both me and my sister, the one common thing is you have that common sense, hopefully, to make that distinction and kind of know where to go, mm-hmm. what to do when you're faced with that. So I hope, hope that's where I am. And I hope that's what I can instill in my daughter too. Mm. So yeah. I think it helps to have awesome parents. Like I said, hi, mom and dad.
Okay. Well, moving on to the questions that I ask all my guests. Okay. So Jenny, can you tell me a pet peeve of yours?
I have a lot of friends who are guilty of this, so it's not like I don't like people who do this, but
nervous.
Grammar is very important to me. And when people don't pay attention to their grammar, it just bothers me to no end. That's one. And they're little things too, like further versus far. That's one of the worst ones. People always say further when they mean farther.
What's the difference? So our listeners know.
Farther is a distance. So I'm going to go further means, you know, hypothetically in this world, in the career world or something, but I'm going to farther is a distance. Mm. That's one. So things like that really bother me. And people who write with a lot of commas, oh, that's the worst. Yeah. Same thing with like dashes or, you know, whatever. But, and I always get mad at my husband about this because he uses dashes and commas and clauses constantly in his writing.
I'm really?
Like, no. Like, what is your thought? Like, give me your thought. Give it to me in one sentence and then move on to the next thought in the next sentence.
What's your thought on Oxford commas?
Oh, I definitely do this. Here's my example.
Okay.
So I'm writing a will to Natalie, Julia, and Harry. If I do Natalie, comma, Julia, comma, Harry, and Harry, very clear that money gets split three ways, right? If I do Natalie, comma, Julia, and Harry, it's conceivable that Natalie gets half, Julia and Harry each get a quarter. You always have that comma then. Mm. So I don't know.
That's a very good example.
I learned it from my writing teacher, my Mr. Cedrone.
Oh, hope you're listening to Mr. Cedrone. Okay, what's your favorite chore?
I love all chores.
This is the first time anyone's ever said this on this podcast.
I love taking dirty things and making them clean and messy things and making them neat. It's just like wonderful. It's because I'm so results oriented and there's always results. And it's just so wonderful. And whenever I'm in a bad mood and, you know, I feel like self-pitying or things aren't going my way or I don't know what to do, it's like, okay, let me vacuum first and then let me clean the bathroom and then let me do the dishes and then, okay, let me clean, like, wash the pillows and disinfect them.
Oh my gosh. Wait, do you have a favorite among these?
Well, I would say I really love to vacuum simply because I love my Dyson vacuum. What else do I love? I love anything with vinegar because vinegar is such a natural disinfectant. So I love, like, you know, cleaning my pillows with, you know, you put a run a wash with your pillows and your hot water and vinegar and same with white sheets. You don't want to use bleach because that causes yellowing, but vinegar gets it all out. So that's another thing.
Yeah, that's good. What's the first website you check in the morning?
I get my New York Times kind of daily briefing. And so that's what I usually go to. Mm-hmm. Depends if it's like football season or something, I'll check the scores.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And can you tell me about your morning and evening routines, rituals that you have?
Yeah. So in the morning, my husband is wonderful and gets up earlier than I do. And he makes coffee and then brings it up and puts it on my nightside table and then wakes me up. And so when I turn over, there's immediately hot, fresh coffee waiting for me. And that's just the best. And then I get my phone and then I scroll through my New York Times or whatever. But I like listening to the podcasts as I get ready. And in the mornings, I usually listen to the BBC Global World News because it gives a nice world perspective. Sometimes it's very depressing. It's like child soldiers in Africa and, you know, horrible refugee camps. And, you know, my husband will always be like, I don't want to listen to this in the morning. This is not the way to get your day started. I'm like, no, but it makes you feel so lucky to be in this world. And, you know,
yeah.
Whatever bad thing might be happening is really nothing compared to what people around the world are facing. Yeah. So there's that. And then I listen to during football season. I always listen to the Grantland NFL podcast with Robert Mays and Bill Barnwell. Hey guys, in case this gets tagged. I really enjoy that podcast because they're one of the few football podcasts that don't just talk about fantasy scores and they really go through the offensive lines and the defensive lines. And that's the stuff that really matters and makes the games go. So it's much more than just the fantasy score. So I really appreciate their analysis of the individual players there.
Cool. Awesome. Do you have any evening routines?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I take my evening oral care routine very seriously.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I brush my teeth for a really long time. Well, my dentist always told me to floss first. I'd be interested. What does your dad say?
He flosses after.
Okay. Because I've heard mixed things. But mine always tells me to floss first, but your dad flosses second.
So what he does, he brushes his teeth and then he flosses and then he does like a light like brush again.
Oh, he does that. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'll floss first, and then I'll brush, and then I'll chug a bunch of water, because once you do the mouthwash thing, you can't eat or drink for 30 minutes to an hour, so I have to make sure I get all my water first. And then I'll, like, do my face care routine or whatever. But
And that's part of, you and Timur are kind of aligned on the oral hygiene, right?
Yeah, that's one of the things that I really love about him. One of the things, and he's going to be so embarrassed by this. I think he'll be okay. He should be embarrassed. I think a little embarrassment is good for people once in a while. It makes them realize they're not perfect and human. But really early on in our relationship, he was up at Dartmouth visiting. It was around Thanksgiving. And like I was like watching football in the living room, and he went to go floss, and then he had his floss, and he came out into the living room and was kind of flossing and talking to me. And it was just like, you know, so one, I love the fact that he was like flossing, and two, it was just like so intimate and so like familial.
Yeah,
so
I totally agree with you. Actually, one of my favorite things is to brush teeth with people.
Really?
Yes. Like whenever I have guests over or anything, like
we can have a toothbrush.
Yeah, I love. There's something about it. It's very, like, it is kind of intimate, and it's also fun, and, like, it's fun to, like, talk to people while they're doing it, and, like, it's always, like, interesting stuff comes out, I think, like, you're, like, getting ready for bed, and there's something yeah. about it that I find really...
And I find it's very, you can't do anything else while you're brushing your teeth. You're, like, that's when, my husband always gets really upset with me sometimes, because, like, he'll be brushing his teeth, and I'll be brushing my teeth, and then I'll ask him, like, these really deep, meaningful questions. Yeah. And he'll be like, I can't talk to you right now. Like, why do you always do this to me when I have a toothbrush in my mouth? I'm like, well, this is because this is when I'm, like, thinking about stuff. Like, normally we have, like, a TV show to watch. I'm, like, cooking dinner. But now I'm like, okay, like, how are we going to raise our daughter? Oh, my God. He's like, well, like, I can't answer this right now. And it just happens constantly. I think it's one of his pet peeves with me.
So funny.
But I totally agree. It's like you just have all this time. Like, I mean, not all this. For me, it is because I brush my teeth for a very long time.
Oh, that's so good. All right. So, Jenny, can you tell me what you think your best resume virtue is and your best eulogy virtue?
Okay. So resume virtue, I think, is just I get things done. It doesn't matter what it is. It doesn't matter if you give me a menial task or like a Herculean task. I will get it done, and I will get it done well, I think, because
very true.
I have my standards. And it doesn't matter if people care or not, but like I will get it done. Sorry, the eulogy virtue is a really tough one.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I hope this is true with people, but I hope that my eulogy virtue is that people will say that I made those around me feel very loved and appreciated and accepted. I think it's one thing to love someone. I think it's another thing for the other person to receive it and actually feel it. And so I just really hope that those people around me who've supported me my whole life and because you don't do anything, like nothing you do is on your own. Like everything you do has to do with like partly luck, partly with the people around you. And I just hope that all those people around me just know how important they were to me and that they like really felt loved and appreciated.
Yeah.
So
I think they will, Jenny.
I hope so.
Yeah. All right. So last question. Who is someone famous who you would want to listen to this podcast episode?
Ruth Bader Ginsburg. You know, everybody knows about the legal stuff. I think what really impressed me about her is how humble she is and how much she devoted to her family and how much she gives credit to her family. So when I most recently heard her talk, you know, somebody asked her what she credits with her success. And she said she really credited her husband. You know, he was the good cook in the family and helped take care of her kids. And without him, she couldn't have done her whole career. But if you read the official biographies and stuff, it seems like the reverse, you know, where she, when he had cancer, she was taking his law school exams and notes and stuff while also taking care of the newborn baby and like giving birth during law school, I think it was. I mean, so when you read the stuff about her, she's like this huge superhero woman, and she is a superhero woman, don't get me wrong. And it was just so wonderful to me that when you ask her in reverse, I feel like she doesn't think of herself as a superhero woman. She credits so much to those around her. And I just really respect that about her and think it's wonderful.
Mm. Yeah, awesome. All right, so thanks for joining this week's episode of Person Natalie with guest Jenny Chi Timmer. I think this week's life lesson has been to just get out of the bathroom. Right?
Get out of the bathroom.
Get out of the bathroom. Hope you all have a fantastic...
But I would say drink a lot of water and pee a lot because it's very important for your health. And it's something that I stick to religiously. Just get in the bathroom for that. People who know me will understand that.
All right. Well, hope you all have a fantastic week and join us for next week's episode. And as always, let's talk awesome.